Hello, everyone. Welcome to Beyond Awakening, the Future of Spiritual Practice. I'm Paul Taylor, the president of Evolving Wisdom, one of the organizations producing this event. And tonight, we'll be continuing this deep exploration of the future of spiritual practice with spiritual teachers Samuel Bonder and Linda Groves Bonder. Samuel founded the School of Psycho-Spiritual Integration and Whole Being Awakening called Waking Down in Mutuality. I'm happy to let you know that our community has continued to grow and now includes almost 34,000 sincere participants. Terry Patton is the visionary behind this groundbreaking series and our host. Terry is a vital leading voice in the fields of integral evolutionary practice, leadership, and spirituality, whose work involves challenging, supporting, and connecting evolutionaries all over the world. He is the author with Ken Wilber of Integral Life Practice, and his personal website is integralspiritualpractice.com. Warm welcome to you, Terry.
Thanks so much, Paul. Hi, everybody. Welcome to our broadcast tonight. As you're probably well aware, I conceived and founded this series in order to further the conversations at the edge of consciousness and culture where we are indeed creating the future and creating the future of our own personal and collective evolution. This is a trying and exciting time in human history and in human evolution. And I wanted to pose a key question. How can our spirituality be a resource that enables us to rise to the challenges of our time? How can we actually turn this amazing corner that we seem to need to turn as a species into a sustainable relationship to our planet and biosphere? And what are the resources that are going to enable us to do that? It seems to me that in part a kind of inspiration, which is cultural and personal, spiritual in nature, has got to be part of the equation. And so I wanted to have conversations with spiritual teachers of all types who I thought cared about this and had pressed into new territory in one way or another. So we've had a whole series already of adventuresome and probing and enlivening conversations. And tonight I'm really happy to be joining Samuel Bonder and Linda Groves Bonder in dialogue we've decided to title Becoming a Human Son. Samuel Bonder founded the International Waking Down in Mutuality Teaching and Community, and he's the author of quite a few books, including Healing the Spirit-Matter Split, Waking Down, a couple of novels, a book I co-authored with him years and years ago. Samuel is a pioneer in the democratization of embodied awakening and accelerated personal and mutual evolution. Since 1992, he and his wife, Linda, and other Waking Down teachers have helped hundreds of people stabilize divinely human unity consciousness and to grow in integral expression of their total potential. Together, Samuel and Linda are now co-authoring a book titled The Human Son, Radiant Gateways to Your Awakening, Wholeness, and Unique Purpose. And if you'd like to get a free online audio-based introduction to their work and receive their newsletter, you can visit heartgazing.com. Linda Groves Bonder is a senior teacher and spiritual leader in the Waking Down in Mutuality School, and she's also Samuel's full-time partner and beloved partner altogether and teaching partner in transmitting this evolutionary heart of life. And she's very well-known and appreciated among their colleagues and clients for her passionate love of all creatures and all creation. As a teacher, she emphasizes the utter uniqueness of each person's path and growth. And she's also a professional singer and songwriter, quite talented. She's soon bringing out a new CD titled Joy of Being, which is focused on healing and awakening. And along with Samuel, she is a founding member of Integral Institute. And to learn more about her and Samuel's work, see samuelandlinda.com. So those are two websites, heartgazing.com and samuelandlinda.com. Now, speaking personally, I want to say that one of the things I deeply appreciate about Samuel and Linda is the deep heart of care and tenderness and love that motivates and powers their work with people. The most advanced teachers in the Waking Down school develop a remarkable capacity for deep empathy and resonance with people and care. And what's especially touching to me is that they have the natural ability to see the divinely human being in the person before them without becoming confused by their imperfect, messy, broken, hurting ordinariness. I've known Samuel for many years, and our life paths have proceeded on parallel, independent tracks sometimes, but woven together again and again over the years. And with great mutual respect and affection, we have been on this path together now well over half our lives. So it's a special personal delight for me to welcome both of you, Samuel and Linda, as my guests tonight.
Well, thank you so much, Terry. It's really great to be with you.
Yeah, it is a real pleasure to be part of your series, Terry. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, we've been having quite a conversation here on this series. And as I kind of alluded to at the beginning, you know, I began the path with the sense that, like the famous quote that's so often attributed to Albert Einstein, we face problems that cannot be solved at the level of consciousness that created them, and that higher consciousness was an obligation, it seemed to me, just in order to be part of the process of rising to those challenges. And after over 35 years of intensive spiritual practice, I do feel that my investment has paid off and I've grown and I'm so much more happy, alive, awake, and on purpose in ways that I'm deeply grateful for. But I also see that there's an urgency that requires a new pace of change. And it seems that we're in a unique moment in which an awful lot of crises are converging. We're also really waking up to evolution. So I'm finding myself asking, what aspects of the evolution of spiritual practice are emerging or intensifying now that can somehow help us rise to meet this? And I know you've really been pioneering an approach to awakening that includes more people. And I want to give you a chance to just kind of introduce that to us and maybe tell us how you think it might have relevance to these questions I'm asking in this series.
Well, yeah, thanks, Terry. I mean, as as you introduced there, you and I have shared similar and yet distinct, in many ways, perspectives. But we've interwoven together over quite a few years now. Hadn't realized it was over half of both of our lives. That's interesting. And in the last not quite 20 years, what led to this Waking Down and Mutuality work was my having come to a point of no longer being able to continue in a somewhat traditional approach that seemed to take a very long time and require, on some levels, kind of superhuman application to practice, discipline, self-transcendence, and so forth, and went through this transformational sequence myself in the early 1990s that led to the founding of this approach, which really didn't come out of my head. It revealed itself, essentially. And a lot of what I would say is at the essence of an answer to your question is that it comes from what we could call the divinely human heart of our total existence, not only our total individual existence, but also our total collective existence. So there seems to me to be something at play here in human society, and some of us are perhaps at a leading edge of sensing it, that is all about a process in which our very nature is calling us into the kinds of clarity, presence, and ardent participation in life that you're talking about. So it's as if it's happening spontaneously in many ways, and our job is to clarify what its primary elements are and learn how to cooperate with that great power of being, that heart of existence, individually and collectively together.
Yeah, I'd actually like to add to that. Thank you, Samuel. It's really interesting observing individuals over the years that I've been a teacher and feeling individuals coming into the work or kind of dipping their toe in a little bit just to see what's here for them. They come in with different places in their being that's feeling like there has to be more. And it can show up differently for each person. So it's so unique to each individual as they start to tap into, in their own being, what's missing here? What is it that is really driving me forward? And what will assist me in that path, in that driving forward? So the one thing that I absolutely love about the work that the teachers of Waking Down and Mutuality do and Samuel and I are doing and many, many people across the world are doing now is helping individuals tap into their uniqueness, their unique path. What is it that really will take them to the next level of insight, next level of evolutionary awakening?
Now, it might be helpful to provide a little more context. Maybe I could observe something that would be helpful. Sometimes in trying to describe your work to others, Daniel, I've said that in some ways it seems that it rises out of your insight that the radical awakening in the Great Enlightenment traditions was always about something fundamental in consciousness that wasn't identical to all the purification and perfection of the body-mind that most of the path seemed to be preoccupied with. And it was, for you, kind of a, I think it was a loving realization, a heart realization, but a very much a an insight as well that, hey, we don't have to perfect the body-mind first. This awakening can happen directly. And with that decision, in some sense, or clarity, that although all of that purification and refinement of the personality and the psyche and the opening of chakras and all the other things that might be part of the paths, you know, those might be perfectly positive things in their manifestation in individual human lives. They were a kind of rigid cookie cutter that was requiring people to do all these things that weren't themselves the radical awakening in consciousness, and that through something very direct and having to do with seeing the divinity that was already there in someone before any of that transformation of the body-mind had taken place. You just wanted to open the door for them to awaken directly. And that seemed to me to be the heart of where your work began and why it makes sense for you to call yourself a pioneer in the democratization of awakening. But it seems important to kind of press into that and ask you, how does that operate in people's lives? What really happens? And how does that enable them to be of service?
Well, yeah, that's, I think, gets right down to the essence here. I mean, there are, you know, thousands of our brothers and sisters are listening in and engaged in this kind of consideration with you and all of us who are talking about it. And yeah, that's how it began for me. I did not come into awakening and this kind of work by kind of gaining a credential in an established field or tradition. I had to find my own way, and in some ways, even at the risk of spirituality, it had to be very much aligned to my own human integrity as a person. And without going into all the details of what unfolded, the shifts that occurred then made it evident to me, and then as I found that I could help others do the same thing, to come into this radical awakening of consciousness, but in a very embodied way, and one that did not appear to require a radical transcendence of ego or a disidentification with my ordinary humanness, And then I began to see this replicating itself in others. So this impulse, well, you know, if I can do this as someone who essentially became a kind of renegade or someone who left the fold of the traditional path, then who can't? And what do we have to do to find out what appears to be newly emerging here? And so the whole adventure, really, not only for myself, but for others who have come into our particular approach, and we see it more and more happening among many other people, there is this movement toward integration, toward wholeness, and toward a revaluation of the more ancient and medieval criteria, when historically and evolutionarily, we humans were really first discovering that there was the possibility of this great identification with an ultimate dimension of consciousness. And so it does seem to me that a new evolutionary cycle is getting underway that is evident in many schools and traditions and communities of practice around the world, and we're just part of that, doing our own approach to it.
Yeah,
is there some aspect of your unique approach that would be informative and valuable to people who are not necessarily participating in the particular form of your work and, you know, the Waking Down and Mutuality work or your personal students, but just by hearing what you have to say, it might open some doors or liberate some, you know, misconceptions in some way that would be valuable, that might be summary and useful to state to kind of orient people to your unique approach?
Yeah, well, thank you. I'll just say something quickly, and then, Linda, maybe you can respond on this too. But I think the main thing that we want to say is what we've been looking for is what's what I would say biospiritually generic. So in other words, what makes it work is that it's potential for, at least in principle, any human being. And it won't necessarily take the form of involvement in our work, and we really wanted today on the call to make sure to communicate the things to people that we feel can be of use to, you know, to all of you who are listening in your own lives. So, Linda, you want to talk to that a bit? Or?
Yeah, thank you, Samuel. I think that for many approaching certain spiritual paths, it is about spiritual awakening. It's about conscious awakening, and particularly in our path, it's about conscious embodied awakening. But for some who are feeling perhaps a lack or a limitation in their life, it may not necessarily be about quote-unquote conscious embodied awakening. It may just be that they are coming from different walks of life, different religious belief systems, and yet they're still feeling that there's something more to their existence and something that can actually assist them to move in the world in a way that helps others grow and evolve. Those people speak to my heart, as well as all of the spiritual seekers looking for conscious awakening in and as the body mind. Everybody who is showing up in their own individual life with a need or a passion to grow in themselves and in turn to help others grow in themselves is really what we're addressing here, I think, in many ways. Many paths are addressing that as well, in assisting individuals to have more of a growth and evolutionary path to become more of the unique self, to be the authentic self, to be the one who is living as true to themselves as they can so that they can really transmit in their own way to others and to assist others to do the same. So being that human son of authenticity, being that human son of awakeness is one of the things that is going to actually drive, I believe, our world into more of this grounded, embodied awareness of each other. It's not just about self-realization. It's about other realization. And that's where we can all do our work as best we can. You know, there's not the perfect scenario, obviously. And, Terry, you talked about not having to perfect the body mind. That's absolutely true. We are just being our divinely human selves as best we can, moving in the world the way that we move. And there, I am seeing more and more in individuals over time this immense passion to help others be that authentic one.
Now, there have been a number of different points of view about spirituality and awakening that have surfaced during the series of conversations that I've been having. There's a view that there is a radical awakening to consciousness itself that liberates a person from this whole dimension of existence, and that on that basis one can be awakened to the evolutionary impulse, the ecstatic urgency of this force that has driven the whole evolutionary process for 13.7 billion years. And there is the idea, in my very last interview I spoke with Dan Millman, and he was saying something that on the surface sounds a lot like what some of what you've said here, which is that right here in the ordinariness of life, this is the spiritual moment, and bringing wisdom, compassion, a peaceful heart, and a warrior spirit, you know, is the way to meet that. How would you characterize your perspective on these things? In what ways do you join with or distinguish yourself from these other perspectives on what spirituality is and how it, what its implications are for us in our ordinary living and even in our spiritual practice?
Well, yeah, thank you. I think one simple way to respond to that is, as you were describing those two perspectives, I wasn't fundamentally in argument with either one of them. I think our approach is something of a both and. So it's a recognition that there is the possibility of access to a transcendent dimension of our existence, without which, in fact, it appears to us that we humans are instinctively sensing that something's missing. There's a lack, something's wrong. And so that access to the transcendent is a crucial part of our process, and we teach it very vigorously and urge everyone everywhere to find your own way into it. At the same time, more and more there is a recognition along the lines of what Dan was saying. There's a recognition from many different directions, from philosophy, from science, from psychology, from biology. There's a recognition of the intrinsic unity of all nature. One philosopher I was reading recently was talking about how it's more and more evident that matter is intrinsically sentient. So a big piece of our part of it that echoes Dan is that if you're inclined to seek for a great spiritual truth, bravo, go for it. Eventually you will discover very likely that matter is equally as real, divine, and important as spirit, and all of the aspects of our ordinary existence are themselves the great temple place of the Holy of Holies. There isn't a fundamental difference. I mean, that's one essential summary of a key point of it, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think also, Samuel, there's the place where spiritual practice itself has changed, and individuals have different viewpoints about their own particular spiritual practice. Traditionally, of course, you know, meditation's important, and yoga, and many, many, many different forms of spiritual disciplines and practices. And in this embodied landing of that conscious nature, where matter and consciousness is equally realized, people tend to also realize that spiritual practice changes and shifts for them. Sometimes their meditation practice maybe isn't singing as true to their heart as much as it did before, and so each individual finds different ways to find their spiritual practice and discipline. Very simple life changes, actually, you know, or enriching life experiences such as walking in nature or doing your gardening or, you know, many different forms that in some ways people technically may not look at as a spiritual practice, and yet you are in life and materially feeling and being with nature and with creatures. That is a form, and it speaks very much to many, many individuals.
Are we going down the road you're looking for here, Terry, or should we
take a little tack?
That was
great. Maybe what I really want to ask here is, in the work you're doing, do you see a new level of capacity and passion emerging? Do you see the beginning of a cultural shift that could rise to this kind of cultural transformation that seems necessary? Or do you see seeds of such a thing? What is your sense of how the work you're doing and the way that you're teaching will enable this kind of organic process? Because what I hear you saying, you're talking about the organic unfoldment of being in each individual, and that seems, you know, like a beautiful thing. But there's kind of a stretch that seems to be needed. You know, that this organism that we are, the branches need to stretch as well as the roots just kind of drawing up what naturally comes through. And so this organic process of people discovering natural shifts and the kind of almost shamanic and organic process of their own growth is also conditioned by the fact that we're in a world that's in a crisis, and that to some degree we need to rise to meet an external relational transformative challenge. And, you know, how do those connect?
Well, yeah, it seems to us that what's going on is that the human spirit, if we may use that phrase, or the divinely human spirit, is itself spontaneously and organically rising to meet the occasion and showing up in the form of body by body, heart by heart, person by person, people feeling this call, this insistence in their being to realize their greatest truth and make a contribution. And interestingly enough, actually, is an answer to your question that came through in a recent survey we did of people on our own mailing list, and we discovered that there's an actually noticeable shift toward contribution, toward making a difference, toward finding and expressing one's unique purpose as an awakened being, not having awakening be an alternative to finding your gifts and making your contribution in life. So it does seem to us that this is very much underway. And another piece of it is that what makes it feasible, you know, how do we get from here to there? What makes it feasible is the coinciding of the capacity, for instance, technologically, for 34,000 plus of us to be considering this together, you know, even live all over the world. The coincidence of that with, we could say, the radiation or the transmission of these awakening and awakened conditions between and among us, certainly from people who are functioning as teachers who are a bit more advanced than others, to students or aspirants, but also more and more collectively. We're really seeing that. I mean, I've been quite surprised by it and delighted, and my optimism is undimmed despite the challenges that we're all, you know, obviously having more and more in our faces.
I'm really happy you mentioned the results from the survey, Samuel. I was going to mention that as well, because that was a real eye-opener for us, and that has actually shifted and changed dramatically over the last couple of years at least, if not longer. We're also witnessing that in workshops and events that we're doing just around the world, how individuals are stepping up and saying, yeah, self-realization is really important to me because I feel that I have a purpose here and a need to make change in the world. So it's really very powerful and I think a lot more prominent these days. And our work, I think, is actually accelerating that awareness through the awakening process, through that deepening in self, through that recognition of what one's purpose is, what is driving them, and then they realize as best they can, and then they bring that out into the world in their own unique ways. And again, their own unique ways are very many. There are several different unique ways of how change can happen in the world, which is actually accelerating.
So you're let me see if I can feed back what I'm getting from this, that in a way there's a spontaneously manifesting process of awakening that is organically ready to happen in certain people and with the right kinds of support and catalytic transmission and education and so forth, that this natural unfoldment allows those individuals then to actualize their unique purpose in a way that a standard one-size-fits-all spiritual path couldn't possibly do, and that by attending to the unique processes of each individual in the way that you do in your work, you're liberating the inherent and unique kinds of expression that many different individuals have, and that some of them are going to have outward expressions that really serve the world in obvious, important ways. Others might not be quite so obviously important, but in some way that they're part of this network and web of culture that does create something new, and somehow you're finding yourself feeling more evidence of that and faith in that process. Am I getting you right?
That sounds right to me. Ah. I mean, we're actually thrilled to see the maturity of not just spiritual yearning and intent, but also character development that people are, kind of as we meet them and come in contact with them, it's dramatically different from certainly what was going on in the 90s, but even over the last, like Linda said, the last 4 or 5 years, it's really shifting quite a bit. And it does appear now that more and more, and we're seeing this also, we have on a much smaller scale than your beautiful course here, but we have people doing group emails and group conference calls from all over the world, and they're discovering, even before they've come into a what we could call a full, stable realization of this embodiment of consciousness, they're finding that their interaction with one another is transmissive, is catalytic, is accelerating the process of growth and change in them. So it's a very exciting new discovery for everybody who finds their way into such forms of growth. And again, similar things are happening in so many of these different schools and gatherings around the world.
So let's unpack that a little more in terms of what that means for an individual. Should I be, as a listener to this, should I be hearing from you that that I don't have to feel as awestruck and intimidated by the solemn truths and solemn sanctities of religious and spiritual truths, but to trust myself more and feel that the natural unfoldment of my own curiosity and the opening of my own consciousness and insight and my natural virtues is something I can just trust. Help me translate that. I'm just thinking of someone who hasn't really got a lot of familiarity with your work before. How does how does what you have to say help me respond? Because I think most of the people in this conversation are interested in the question I asked, you know, how can my spirituality help me make a difference? And how can spirituality in general help us all rise to the moral challenge of our time? How does your unique approach kind of, what are the implications that I can take to heart and use right now?
Well, I'd like to start by saying that it isn't merely just an organic, okay, just a flow organic, let's just trust in whatever arises right now, kind of a graceful aspect of just watching what unfolds. There is a very, very distinct diving into practice and discipline for each individual as they encounter the work. However, those practices and disciplines are realized through the assistance of working with teachers, working with mentors, going to workshops, reading the materials, feeling also into previous traditions that each body has experienced. That's very important. You don't need to throw everything out in order to do a particular path. Everything that one has experienced and learned on their path has gotten them to a particular stage right in this moment. That is really important to honor and to look at and to feel. And part of this work is also deeply, deeply rooted in discrimination for each body. The deep discernment as to what is working and what isn't working, and that can actually harken back to previous paths and conditioning in those paths that for one person listening right now might be thinking, well, you know, this piece isn't really working for me in the same way, so now I'm looking for something else to come in. That's graceful, but there's also a great practice in discovering the next phase. So all of the previous places where people have come from is really important not to negate any of it. It is not merely just graceful, organic holding and letting everything unfold. There is very much a discipline to it. And we can go into more detail about that, Terry, but maybe, Samuel, you want to add to that or say something else?
Well, yeah, I was going to say something very similar off the bat, so I'll pick up on what you've said, Linda. What we're saying to people essentially is no matter what your current experience is, whether you feel like you've got a great practice and you're making progress, or whether perhaps you feel like, gee, I don't know if I could ever be a really disciplined practitioner the way I've learned that I need to be, we're inviting you to take stock of yourself and become a passionate investigator of reality, starting with and always based in your own reality.
Right.
We're saying, as Linda was implying there, the kind of process that we're talking about is not just simple and easy street. When we say organic and spontaneous, we're also assuming that to cooperate with it can put you through some very challenging trials and transformations and ordeals and will. Because so much of what spirituality has traditionally tried to do that people have done as a kind of a form of escape is now, to quote one of our teachers, crashing to earth. And the earth that it's crashing into, this embodiment process, it includes a profound exposure to all our cut-off parts. And really what it takes, Terry, as we've discovered, and we see it happening among many people, including people with no association with our specific work, is a recognition, as another mentor once said to me, that spirituality is not just evolutionary, it is itself evolving. And therefore, it doesn't take less intent and fierceness and seriousness. In many ways, it takes more to trust yourself while at the same time not simply putting yourself to sleep with, you know, uninspected beliefs. It implies that you're going to open up to exploring all kinds of potentially difficult and challenging material in yourself, in your patterns, and learning how to live your life according to not just your own truth in some kind of self-absorbed adolescent way, but your own truth as an emergent being in this emergent, evolving collective that's coming to stark recognitions of the newness of spirituality in our time, what's becoming not only possible but really necessary.
Yes, that resonates for me. You know, as I'm hearing you talk, Samuel, I'm finding myself remembering many occasions when I've watched you very, very tenderly and very powerfully, you know, see that divinely human being in an aspirant that you've been working with, and how that almost is a power or a siddhi, a kind of seeing and invoking of that divinely human person. I wonder maybe what would be even the most interesting in this dialogue would be for you to tell some stories about these processes, so that maybe it can come to life with the vividness and particularity that only a particular case can bring forward. Is there a
sure.
any story or example come to mind?
Yeah, well, it's interesting, Terry. We're embarked, as you mentioned at the beginning, on this book project, The Human Son. In our talk today, we're talking about becoming human sons, after all, radiant, conscious beings, fully human and deeply divine. And we're collecting lots of stories as well as continuing to be exposed to them. One that just came through very recently is by a guy we know who's actually very deeply involved in the integral movement. He's one of the leaders, and he's also plugged into our process. And it had to do with one of the insights that we're suggesting is that the older form, the quality of spirituality or really of participation that humans, whether spiritual or more secular, have engaged for the last several thousand years is now undergoing a shift. And part of that shift is a recognition that our consciousness itself, our most essential feeling of being ourselves, went through a kind of dissociation from the world that we were all participating in over historical time. And in the classic Eastern formulation, it became, let me out of here, I've got to escape, I've got to find liberation, I've got to find enlightenment. And in the more classic, we could say, Western formulation, and of course these are vast oversimplifications and generalizations, but they're helpful enough. In the Western format, it showed itself more and has continued to in the, okay, let me get into control of nature, let me fix this, let me make it the way I want it to be. And so our friend was describing how after he first started considering this particular aspect of what we're suggesting about humanity and our evolution, he was doing an advanced Tibetan Buddhist style meditation that he'd been practicing for many years that actually sounds rather simple, a process of just allowing whatever was coming up to be there. And it suddenly dawned on him for the first time, and he had not realized that his whole life and definitely his meditation and spirituality were driven by impulses that he hadn't picked up on before. One was a very subtle but chronic, continual attempt to try to get away, to find a self that was somehow separate from the world. And the other, he was doing an energy meditation, a breathing process a little bit later, and he realized right in the midst of that he was actually trying to fix himself, like there was something wrong that he needed to work on and gain complete control of. And so these may sound like simplistic recognitions, but what it did for him was liberate him into a whole next cycle of his exploration of, okay, what's driving me here? And that, of course, is a core aspect of what we invite people to kind of take a breath, you know, stop for a moment from all the practicing and all the working. Not that that's a bad thing, but just give yourself a permission to feel what's motivating it all underneath. And that's what this man was giving voice to, a recognition of what we call the core wound, or the essential paradox of being simultaneously very finite and yet knowing there's more, knowing that we can be greater, and sensing that something's missing that we need to find.
Yeah, I also have a story of an elderly woman who met us many years ago, who had been on the path for many, many years, you know, very strong practitioner of meditation and certain yogas, and she had very much grown in that path, but had not had her awakening, which is what was really driving her being. And so after encountering us at a workshop, she started talking with us and saying she wanted to plug in deeply into doing some session work. I had worked with her for a few years, and one of the aspects of our work together was being able to just walk her through many, many places in her being, that some of which were places where she was very stuck due to some of the previous conditioning in her practice, where she was actually rotting out of, or pieces were dropping away. And she would ask me, can you repeat that one more time? Can you say it in a different way? Certain aspects of things that I was teaching her through those years. And I kept telling her, repetition is really good. Repetition is very, very important. And one of the reasons why repetition is really good and important is that we talked about trust a little bit earlier in this conversation. The repetition actually enables one to start to listen from a deeper place in their being, not just from the conceptual mind and hearing aspect, but from a whole being listening with that repetition of points and places, reflections back to the individual. So she was really starting to percolate with all of these places in her being. She could feel her body becoming more energetic and alive with these recognitions, and she had her awakening after many years of being a seeker. So it was a very powerful and important transition in her life that to this very day is just driving her being in a most beautiful, unique way.
Shall we continue, or do you want to?
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking that's beautiful. Those are kind of one level of those are telling the story of people over time. I'm curious as to when you're in the room, how is it that you work? How do you interact? What is the technique or the methodology of this work, and how does it activate, and how might people take that to heart and make use of it themselves, or maybe some of it they can't, except by working directly with you? I don't know.
Well, I actually, there's a great deal that people can take and make use of, even in the midst of your daily life and your current practice, whatever it may be, if someone's so inclined. The essence of it, Terry, is that we make a communication and we look to establish with people and discover a relationship. And it can be quite distant, where people tap into our teachings and what we call this transmission of the heart of conscious existence or conscious embodiment. And they can do that, you know, from quite afar, or they can come more deeply into it if they feel so moved. But a lot of what goes on when we're working with people is just encountering that person in a very fundamental and essential way. And you yourself have been giving beautiful descriptions to it in the course of the conversation. And you know, there are these traditional practices of listening and receiving transmissions or energy communications, consciousness communications from teachers. And that's certainly part of our approach as well, but it's very mutual. And so when we're actually working with someone person to person, we're listening to them as much as they're listening to us. We're needing to get from them a sense of what we'll see as their own divinely human being emerging, even if they're in complete doubt of it. And so a lot of what we wind up doing, in addition to transmitting this activating, energizing conscious presence that teachers in our work are trained to do, and it's pretty natural. It's 24/7. It's the only way it's real. It's not something you turn on and turn off. But in addition to that, there's an enormous amount with someone who gets seriously involved in such a process. There's an enormous amount of learning how to reframe the way they interpret their experience. So a classic example, someone will get plugged into this process and they'll find that they're going through an awakening of what's called the witness consciousness. We call it the embodied feeling witness consciousness. And it's very blissful and serene, and they tap into that impersonal, transcendent dimension of their being that gracefully takes them out of being kind of in a constricted ego position. And then a week later, they come back to a session or get on the phone or Skype, whatever, and they say, you know, oh, man, I lost it. And I feel like I'm just sort of drowning in my own stuff again. Well, a classic thing we'll wind up saying is, okay, we get it, and we appreciate that it's, you know, a pain in the butt to be back feeling so constricted and separate and uptight again and confused. But what we would propose to you is this is not regress, this is progress. There is a whole being integration going on here, and in fact, though you can't easily find access to it right now, if you persevere in this process and continue to do this investigation of your nature, you'll discover that what's been happening is you have been getting in touch with all of the qualities of your identity, the split off, broken, damaged parts, as well as the more serene, sublime, and transcendent parts. So that's some of what we do. Linda, you want to add to that?
Yeah, well, I'd like to talk to the place also that you're speaking of, Samuel, but taking it a little deeper in with bringing in this place in individuals where they just have these hungry, hurting hearts. They're just hurting on a level that is what is driving them to continue to seek for relief, some kind of equanimity, balancing, relief from some of the difficulties of being in this life. And as you mentioned, Terry, the world is, there's a lot going on right now, a lot of unrest in the world. There's a lot of joy in the world too, but sometimes when you're so caught up in this deep, deep place of needing to be more present in yourself, and even in the midst of the wounds, it's very difficult. So part of the way that we work is to listen to those places, you know, because so much of our upbringing or perhaps some parental conditioning or teachers, I mean, you name it, the wounds come from all directions, are very many different directions and different individuals and experiences for these body minds over time. We listen, we hold, we suggest, and ask tons of questions. And that way, by the listening and the holding and the transmission of being, that starts to help an individual notice that those wounds are not fundamentally wrong. They are not wrong for actually feeling this hungry, hurting heart and being that. They are doing the best that they can. what really starts to unravel then is that deep trust in being, that deep place where they can actually look at all sides, their whole being, all sides of who any individual is, and say, wow, you mean I can actually embrace that too? I don't have to work on that or perfect it or, you know, take medication for it, although medication's for some individuals really important, not to negate that either. It's a really deep, deep falling into all of who one is, and that's the kind of work that is done by the teachers, I feel. That deep holding, deep listening, suggesting different tacks, you know, all along the way, and it's going to change. It changes regularly because we're fluid beings, and we're constantly evolving and growing, and then sometimes we'll slip back, it feels like, but is it really a slip back? It's just where your being is taking you to investigate and discriminate more deeply. That's a lot of the work, and also, obviously, there's lots of courses to do and readings, and as you mentioned, Terry Samuel's got a bunch of books, and our other teachers have some writings and websites to read, and there's many, many different forms of practice that individuals can do along with that very deep, deep holding. It's very rich.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, as I'm speaking about it, I'm just feeling into just recently, this last week even, just some of the individuals who I'm working with, when I get on the phone and I encounter these beings, these beautiful, profound beings, my heart just pours, you know, and I just want to embrace them and to suggest and hold and listen as deeply as I possibly can. And I think if everybody continues to do the best they can in those places, then that's what we're looking for to try to make change in the world, I think.
Well, I'll build right on what you just said, actually, Linda. Linda gave voice to a kind of a deep feminine disposition that is, and a mothering orientation that in some ways is the beginning of this kind of process. This transmission of the deeply embodied and deeply awakened condition that is so central to our work, Terry, and really the engine of the accelerated evolutionary process, it's a kind of a primal nutrition, we like to say, and people feed back to us. They'll sometimes say things, "Whoa, I didn't know I needed this until I started receiving it." And there's an awkward kind of dependence that in some ways goes against the grain of what we know intuitively must become our profound autonomy. But that dependence quickly gets outgrown into a profound mutual interdependence as people take in such a deep infusion, such a validation of who you are right now, such a recognition on the part of someone who you may come to trust really is profoundly awake, that they see you coming into that awakeness in your own unique way, and their job is just to help you along. Well, as that stage of the process matures, then the autonomy and the greater agency on the part of the individual, the clarification of, okay, you know, I've come into some sense of a wholeness and fullness in this awakened way, and now what am I here for? How do I make my best contribution? And how can I work with others who are doing likewise? And, you know, skipping over a whole lot of intermediary steps here and details which have to be discovered by each person and in each relationship of the process, this can become, for many people, a way to get through the seeking stage into this found divinely human life and into the stage that, as Linda and I talk about, it's becoming an embodied bodhisattva or someone who's here with a tremendous call to serve because life and humanity need our service, no question about it.
Thank you. Well, I know we can just keep going, but I'm sure there are others who'd like to join us in this conversation. So if you're listening via the web, I'd like to invite you to type out your question in the instant teleseminar window starting right now. And if you are on the phone, you can raise your hand by pressing star 2. And while you're typing or conceiving your questions, there are a couple things I'd like to let everybody know about. First, we have wonderful sponsors who are making it possible for us to present this to you free of charge, including Next Step Integral. Over the last 4 years, I've had the great pleasure of presenting at Integral Education Seminars hosted by Next Step Integral. And these events have been among the most heartwarming, transformative ones offered in the Integral community. This international nonprofit organization is involved in 5 fields of inquiry: education, parenting, ecology, what they call Gen Next, essentially the younger generation coming up, and community. They're specifically looking at how the Integral visions and perspectives can be put into action, and they do a really excellent job of walking the talk. In the coming year, Next Step Integral will be sponsoring a number of really innovative events, including the first ever seminar on Integral Community, as well as co-sponsoring a mother-daughter retreat entitled Raising Empowered Radiant Daughters, which is going to take place July 24th through 30th, 2011, in Costa Rica, where Miriam Mason Martineau will be co-facilitating with Catherine Woodward Thomas and Jessica Romisher. You can email journeys at journeysofthespirit.com for more information about that mother-daughter retreat in July. And you can learn more about Next Step Integral altogether and sign up for their updates at nextstepintegral.org. That's nextstepintegral.org. And also New Dimensions Media. Check out New Dimensions to hear some of the leading point writers in the world, such as Alice Walker, Dr. Andrew Weil, Gene Houston, who will be our guest here in just another week, Bill Moyers, David White, and many others, as they address a wide range of topics, including health and healing, science, eco-activism, social change, and spirituality. Do it now, and you'll be glad you did. That's New Dimensions Media at newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Also, stay tuned, and at the end of this call, I'll tell you a little more about my upcoming interview with Integral philosopher Steve McIntosh this coming Sunday, November 14th, and with Lama Surya Das, the first Westerner to become a fully empowered Lama in Tibetan Buddhism. That interview will be on the following Tuesday. We're having an extra interview next week. Tuesday and Thursday we'll have interviews. On Tuesday, I'll be talking to Lama Surya Das. That's November 16th. So, okay, let's dive into the question and answer section of this evening with Samuel and Linda. And we have a live question from Hollister, California. And I want to unmute you. Please tell us your name.
Hi, this is Timothy Wilkin.
Hi, Timothy.
Yes,
welcome. What's your question?
I enjoyed the discussion very much. Thank you very much. My question is, you've mostly been speaking about sort of an accelerated mechanism for awakening lots of people from wherever they happen to be in their own path, and I think that's wonderful. With the term mutuality, I wondered if you are also doing anything related to more enlightened people actually working together and beginning to form more enlightened organizations.
Oh, thank you. Great question. And I think it's a cutting-edge question for people who are in this working in this whole domain. And, part of my answer is one of the things that's wonderful is projects like what Terry's doing here. And more and more, particularly in Integral and some of the other kind of collectivizing groups, you see teachers from different orientations coming together, working with one another to be of a more kind of collectively oriented service. I don't know if that answers your question, but from my perspective, Timothy, my sense is that over the months and years to come, this is going to be more and more the focus of finding ways to cooperate, collaborate, and mutually advance the shared principles and values that we have in such a way as to be of the greatest service.
Thank you. Yeah, that's very helpful. One final thought: what do you find that your time frame is with your new advanced teaching methods, from ground to very strongly committed to enlightenment? For instance, a process that in the past has taken sometimes many years. What do you feel your experience is? How much are you able to shorten that? And how long does it take if you use the most advanced approach?
Well, thank you, Timothy. That's a great question also. And it is so unique to each individual. So it's hard to predict for any one person how long it will take. But generally, we have seen, even in the last couple of years, an acceleration of individuals coming into the work and other places as well, where they're having very profound realizations. And so it could be anywhere from a few weeks to a few years. It's really very difficult to pinpoint any one particular time frame for an individual. And the reason for that is that everyone is so unique, and everyone is coming from different backgrounds and different systems. And so all of these things are being looked at and felt and embodied as one drops more deeply into themselves.
Yeah, Timothy, let me add to that also what Linda's saying there, that part of what is emerging now, I believe Rabbi Mark Gaffney of Integral is writing a book with the title The New Enlightenment. And this is something that we've been working on all along. I think, I hope the call has been making that clear, that there's a new vision of the enlightened or awakened condition itself. So there's a kind of a caveat or a caution note here that if you're looking for the kind of awakened condition that is described in some of the ancient texts, it seems so radically, absolutely outside anything like a human personal existence. That's not what we mean. And there's a flip side to the coin then. While the basic awakening can get stably established within a few weeks to a few months, or more likely for most people, 1 to 2 years, or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6, not a whole while, a long time. There are, however, further stages of growth and maturing, challenges and changes to go through, reconfigurations of your whole sense of yourself that do continue to take place afterwards. So that's why one of our phrases for the kind of awakening that happens in our process is a second birth, meaning that after that, there are stages of infancy, childhood, adolescence, growth into more and more greater and greater maturity. Mm-hmm. So there's a new reckoning with what it means to be awake that goes on in the midst of this as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Let's pull a question here from the Instant Teleseminar window. Maybe a very direct and I think important question that needs to be asked. Sasha Dev from Thornhill, Canada asks, how can I be a son to others in the path of evolution?
Linda, go first.
I'm sorry, what was the name again?
Sasha Dev.
Sasha Dev. Hi, Sasha Dev. Thank you for that beautiful question. I would say, as we're addressing through this call, pretty much just being as passionate and dedicated to your evolutionary process, to your own personal awakening, and taking that into your relationships day after day after day. your being, as you evolve and awaken, will touch others. Your human sun, as it becomes fiery inside of you, will emanate and radiate that awakened being force, that grounded awakened being force, as you continue to move in the world. And it sounds as if you have a passion for that just merely by your question. So I totally support you in your further growth and deepening of your being so that you can bring that to others. Daniel, you want to add?
Well, just briefly, I totally agree with what Linda's saying, Sasha Dev, and bravo for wanting to come forward in this way to become a human son for others. And it's important to develop more and more faith that the greatness, this sun-like nature, actually is, even biologically, what forces the heart to pump the blood. It is the life principle itself, and it is very much at the core of your consciousness and your material existence. And just do whatever you can to attend to that, to make that the priority of your life, whatever else you're doing, and find ways to go forward, go through the changes you have to, and you will become more and more confident that you are serving as that kind of human son to others.
Beautiful. Let me bring on Dr. Jerry Rose from Hilo, Hawaii. Welcome to our broadcast.
Oh, aloha. I had no idea you'd know my name.
Aloha.
Aloha, yeah. I think that one of the things I think that is a big issue for people is the concept of perfection. And perfection becomes defined as something outside of ourselves because, you know, there is we know that God is immortal and we're not. And in that discrepancy, people think they're not perfect. And it has all kinds of layers that then rebound back. And I'm always telling people, no, you know, people say, oh, I'm only human. Well, yeah, you're only human, which is a great thing. That's perfect. You are perfectly yourself. And people have a real hard time with that, with the concept of being perfect themselves. And because they want to make this comparison to this eternal other that they sense is, you know, their direction. And, you know, the real acceptance that I think, and I guess, you know, that's part of where my question is, because I think all evil comes from resenting that you're not perfect when you compare yourself to that greater, and turning away, therefore, from the evolution aspect, the evolutionary aspect of your own perfection. People turn away from it and then start to do bad things because we have free will and we can do bad things
rebellion,
you know.
Question here?
Yeah, well, the question is in terms of helping those who have turned away and find themselves on a path that they realize is more and more conflicted. They don't know how to get back because they've sort of corroded themselves, so their path has been so corroded. That I find, you know, people are dealing with that tremendously.
Okay.
I'm wondering how you handle that if you ever do come on, because I think people who come to you are already, you know, they're making the steps toward that, you know, the perfection that's within them. But do you ever find they've come to that place where, oh my God, this is unsustainable where I'm at?
Okay.
And what do you do at that point?
Yeah, well, thank you so much. There's a lot here that you had addressed, and the piece of perfection where individuals, as you're speaking about certain individuals, feeling that they need to perfect themselves directly speaks to what we call the spirit-matter split, the split between recognizing, feeling that, okay, I'm in this material limited personality, and I'm just not perfect, and I never will be, and where is spirit in the midst of that? So see, there's a split there. And part of the work is to help heal that spirit-matter split, to bring consciousness and matter together so that that is a marrying of the two. One is not more important than the other. The phrase divinely human being is one of my favorite phrases in the work, because that's exactly what it is. It's divine in the humanness. And so individuals who are aware of this place in their being that's feeling the split, and yet they're intuiting that there's something more, that's where we help individuals land more fully in that marrying of embodied consciousness. And by the way, I wanted to also say that those individuals who are struggling with that piece of perfection, they are doing the best that they can do in that moment. And as they intuit that there's more, that will actually assist their process moving forward. And also if they desire to seek for certain paths or practices that assist them in that. Thank you so much for your question. Samuel, you want to add to that?
Well, Jerry, I'm wondering if that responds to what you're asking. I guess the only thing that I would add is that some people aren't ready to get over that struggle yet. And the very best thing sometimes for them is just to love them and honor who they are as they are, and live your example of a different disposition. Certainly a lot of times people don't respond to being preached to, but they do appreciate being appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you, Daniel.
That's great. There are a number of really great questions here on the Instant Teleseminar window. I'd like to maybe, I know you could go on for hours on this question, Samuel, but maybe briefer questions, we can get out a few more of them.
Yep.
Frances Goldberg from Indianapolis asks, well, first she thanks both of you for this, and she says, Samuel, I'd like to hear about your connection to the goddess, and could you talk about how that happened for you?
Francis, you must have tapped into something other than our phone call, obviously. So, yes. Well, talk about something I could go on about for hours, but we'll keep it real brief. I think the essence of it, Francis, not being able to say much about what might have preceded this lifetime and so on. The great masters, spiritual adepts who served me, had very direct relationships. They happened to be men, but they had very direct relationships to the divine feminine, or the goddess. I call her the She Mystery. And as one of them put it, at a certain stage in one's process, one may graduate from having a human teacher to being directly related to the God presence, whether in masculine or feminine form. And for me, there was an unfoldment as this awakening began in the early 1990s, 1992 specifically, that led me into this recognition that I'm continually dancing with the great feminine. And it's a, soundbite, it appears that one of the big changes in this divine humanity we're moving into is that kind of relationship is becoming more and more a parity partnership, an equal participation, rather than being the subordinate creature of the great divine other. So it's a huge dance, and I invite you to get in direct contact with us, and we can share more with you about it.
Well, that's beautiful. Thanks. Here's a question from Lawrence in Santa Fe, who says, hi, Samuel and Linda. I'm presently rereading The Knee of Listening with a view to a new perspective from Genpo Roshi, the integration of the manifest and transcendent intuition. My purpose is to clarify my practice, which has been fruitful in certain ways, but which I believe to be afflicted with a kind of dissociation from the pains of existence. In that sense, the inquiry avoiding relationships seems to be a kind of avoidance, a purification or fix. My question is, in what fundamental ways do your way and teaching differ from those of Adi Da, in which I was fairly steeped?
Well, that's a, also subject for a lot, but essentially, I'm sorry, what was the, the questioner's name, Terry?
Lawrence.
Lawrence.
From Santa Fe.
Yeah, essentially, Lawrence, there is a fundamental recognition that really you are the divine emerging yourself as fully so as any of us who happen to be teachers. And the whole orientation to transformation and change becomes one of a great, what we call green lighting, of all the different aspects of your being, not merely to indulge them, but actually to find out what they can reveal for you in your unique and distinctive yoga. And it's this approach, as Linda and I have been saying, is very much to be discovered. I mean, you are an emergent divinely human incarnation, human son yourself, and you have to find your own way as you go. So there is no formula of practice that you have to superimpose on yourself. And there are many other distinctions. Those are key.
Beautiful. Arthur Gillard of Sacramento asks, what's the role, can you elaborate on the role of deep shadow work in spiritual transformation? How does that play out in your work?
Well, deep shadow work, I think, is really very crucial to one's unfoldment and recognition of all parts. Sometimes an individual will come in and say, you know, I just don't want to go back into the story again. This is something I've been working on for years. But actually, it's very important to engage and to drop into and investigate and shine light on the broken places, as we call the broken off zones in one's life and practice. So it's very important, and we do a very deep level of that form of investigation with individuals through their process. Sometimes it's very fluid. It flows with individuals that one person could go into a very deep broken zone and have a sense of a deep healing within the midst of that broken zone through a process called six-step recognition yoga. So there are ways of working the investigation and the integration of the deep wounds in relationship.
I'll just add to that quickly, Arthur, that what this means is that in the shadow aspects of your being, in other words, the parts of your identity and your psyche that are relatively subconscious and unconscious, great energy, attention, and awareness is as if frozen off from your ordinary daily sense of yourself. Deep shadow work in this total context of a divinely human integration process, so including this awakening aspect very much so, and mutuality with others, that deep shadow work winds up liberating. It thaws that energy, attention, and awareness and makes it part of your more and more singular existence. So it's a tremendous self-empowerment as you do that work.
Wonderful. Well, I think we have time to take another live caller. And I'm not sure I have the name exactly right. From St. John's, Florida, Loa Swanson. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. This is Loa Grace in St. Augustine, Florida. Something that I really appreciated was the aspect you touched on about people who've walked spiritual paths of the different traditions and now we're all kind of huddling up, ready to evolve forward, but in a non-traditional way. So that being the case, in the work that the two of you do, how do you, how are you launching? Like, how do you first begin when you have, let's say, a group of people who've done a lot of deep spiritual walking, but from different traditions? What is the common denominator that you open with?
Well, the main thing that we open up with, Lola, is we invite people to simply find out more about our approach. And I think Terry will have a chance to give the website again and so forth. But we invite people to find out the basics of what we're up to and to participate in, to tap into the transmission that we're able, we feel very blessed and privileged to communicate through a variety of means. And we invite people to study these teachings and this new orientation to, again, a kind of, I don't want to say post-traditional, because some people are using very traditional approaches, but certainly a leading-edge evolutionary development of transformational work. So to learn the new perspectives that will aid you as you go forward into new territory. And how that works out with individuals or groups, we wind up, we and the teachers in our growing network, we wind up relating to different individuals and groups in ways that seem to be best for them, helping study groups form locally or online. There are many ways that we can work that out, but the primary thing is to get in touch and let's see what would work out best.
Yeah, actually, too, thank you, Samuel. Samuel and I formed a tour called the Take Heart Tour, where we travel around the world doing workshops. And one of the themes of our workshops is, where is your heart taking you now, which really directly addresses your question, Lila. So it really is a great question to individuals who come in and they're feeling like something's shifting and they're not quite sure what the shift is. So really, by the deep listening and asking a lot of questions so that we as helpers and guides can formulate different suggestions to guide that individual into that self-discovery, that is part of the driving force of the work as well. And that can be done within the group context and definitely is done individually. Thank
Wonderful.
You.
Well, thank you so much. This has been just lovely, and I know everybody's gotten a lot out of this. We haven't been able to get to quite all our questions, but we've kind of run out of time. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you, Samuel, and thank you, Linda. This has just been delightful.
Yes.
Thank
you.
Our pleasure.
Yeah. Before I tell everybody about what's coming up next week and before we all open up the lines so that those of us on the phone can say goodbye, a few reminders. Please make use of our blog at beyondawakeningseries.com/blog. I just offered a new blog post called Finding Your Yes that I hope you'll take time to take a look at. And you can join our Facebook group at beyondawakeningseries.com/Facebook. And there are discussions on all these topics. And in both forums, you can post your comments about today's dialogue and also suggestions for questions for Sunday's dialogue with Steve McIntosh and next Tuesday's dialogue with Lama Surya Das. And if you or anybody you know might be interested in this series, you can forward one of the emails announcing this event so that people can join us, or invite them to register at beyondawakeningseries.com. To find out more about Samuel and Linda, there are two websites, samuelandlinda.com and heartgazing.com. And to learn more about my work, my personal website is integralspiritualpractice.com. And I want to thank some of the partners and sponsors who've made all this possible, especially Ray Lynch Productions. A number of you have asked about the hold music we play just before the call begins. It's a piece titled Only an Enjoyment from the album by Ray Lynch titled Nothing Above My Shoulders But the Evening Sky. His album Deep Breakfast went platinum without him even performing or touring, just based on the depth and beauty of the sounds. His conscious music offers timeless beauty that doesn't grow old, and you can purchase it at raylynch.com or via iTunes. That's raylynch.com. And The Voice for Love. If you've ever wanted to learn how to hear the voice of God within you as a distinct and conversational voice, to receive comfort, understanding, healing, and divine guidance in every area of your life, visit thevoiceforlove.com. David Paul and Candace Doyle, founders of The Voice for Love, have taught tens of thousands of people over the past 15 years how to hear God's voice within them. And whether you call this divine voice higher self, Holy Spirit, Source, God, or true self, David Paul and Candace will share with you their five-step process for experiencing the divine within you as a distinct and conversational voice at thevoiceforlove.com. And please remember to tune in on Sunday, November 14th, in just 4 days at our regular broadcast time, or 3 days, I guess, 5 p.m. Pacific. I'll be speaking with integral philosopher Steve McIntosh. Our dialogue will be titled Progress and Purpose in Evolution. Steve has just finished writing a major new book entitled Evolution's Purpose, an Integral Interpretation of the Scientific Story of Our Origins, and will bring his philosophical brilliance to bear on the questions we've been raising in this series. And then on Tuesday, November 16th, at about the same time, I'll be speaking with Lama Surya Das about a spirituality from the future. And finally, let me just thank you for joining me. Let's open up the phone lines so that we can hear at least some of our each other's voices and say goodbye. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you so much.
Bye, everyone. Thank you, Terry, so much.
Yeah, thank you, Terry.
Yeah,
thanks,
wonderful.
Everybody.
What a blessing.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.